Klondike Center it, and that scores! Matty McDonald!
And over at that Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
Eckers, put it in the wind column!
Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby!
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Okay, happy Thursday. Let's get this hour going on Flames Talk. It is Thursday, September 12th, and we're underway from the South Okanagan Event Center. Welcome to Penticton, British Columbia. That's where we're coming at you from on this Thursday with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. It's Pat Steinberg along with you from the 2024 Young Stars Classic. Good to be here. Good to be alongside Mr. Vickers. And good to have Vicks back on Flames Talk. It's been quite a while since we've done a little FT with AV.
It's been a moment or two. I will say that I've missed you. I will say that I didn't miss you enough to spend 7+ hours in a car with you, but we made it here safely. We are broadcasting, as you mentioned, from a beautiful facility, the South Okanagan Event Center, and it's the Young Stars Classic. How can you not be excited about
that? It is really an awesome event. It gets going on Friday night. The Flames and Winnipeg Jets will kick it off Friday night, and all three games the Flames play will be live right here on Sportsnet 960. The Fan, some pre- and post-game coverage, all of it, we've got it for you. But let's get to the news of the day, news of this Thursday from a Flames standpoint, as one of the remaining three restricted free agents has reportedly, as we're talking on this Thursday, just after 6 o'clock Calgary time when we're talking right now, has reportedly signed. One of the three remaining restricted free agents has reportedly signed, and that would be Jacob Pelche. Sportsnet's Elliot Friedman reporting the Flames have come to an agreement with Pelche on a one-year, two-way contract at $800,000. I'm curious to see when the Flames officially announce it, what it looks like from an two-way standpoint, what that AHL number looks like. Few things on this. I mean, first of all, we shouldn't be surprised on this front. I know that there had been some reports over the last little bit that the two sides were far apart, but my understanding was that that was never the case. Like, there was, I know there was some wrangling, and I know that there was some things that needed to be agreed upon, but everything that I had heard from both the Pelche side and the Flame side was that there was no worry that this was going to get done, and they were going to get something done before training camp, and that ends up being the case. So the reason why there was never any worry was because the Flames knew how important it was for Pelche to get a full training camp in after how disastrous last season was for Jacob on the injury side of things. And Pelche's camp knows how important this year is for him and how important a full training camp is going to be for him. And so missing even a single or a couple on-ice sessions would have served no purpose and would have only hurt Pelche in this regard. So this is always going to get done before training camp. It has gotten done. And now Pelche, who has been at the golf tournament, who's been taking part in the captain skates here, now he will come to camp with a contract under wraps. And, you know, it's a one-year prove-it contract. It really is. And you know, you wondered if this is going to be a multi-year deal, and maybe it would be something where two-way then one-way, but opts to go with the one-year deal with the two-way contract, and now Jacob has the opportunity to make a mark for himself in camp. We'll get into that in a second, but I think the most important element here is that it does get done a week before training camp gets started. It would have been so foolish and so detrimental of the Pelche camp to hold this thing into training camp. And so they don't. They get the job done. They get a deal done. And so now he is under contract. It had to happen. And for the good of the player, the good of how he performs this season, this had to get done.
Well, and there's no reason why it shouldn't have gotten done prior to training camp. And in talking to General Manager Craig Conroy at the golf tournament in his little media avail, talking in specifics about Pelche and the contracts, there was no concern that this wasn't going to get done in advance of training camp, that Jacob Pelche would bring camp with the Calgary Flames. And yeah, for all the reasons you suggested, this is a very key contract to get done from the Pelche camp perspective, because you need to hit the ground running. There's plenty of competition around you, and you just need to be in the right headspace mentally to enter camp, but you also need to physically be there to be able to make your mark in camp. This was just one that just seemed almost, I don't want to say a foregone conclusion because there's so many things that can happen along the way, but there was no reason for this not to get done before camp breaks next week.
So now Jacob can enter camp and focus only on trying to crack this roster and trying to be in the NHL to start the season, which I really do wonder how this looks, and I really do wonder how this plays itself out. Because I think as it stands right now, Vix, we still don't know the most important piece of this puzzle, and that is, what are you? We don't know what Jacob Pelche is at this stage of his professional or NHL career. We have an idea of what we think he might be, what he projects, where he might project best, but in terms of him proving it and in terms of him really showing the Flames and the rest of the league what he is, we don't know. And that's why this year is so important. I asked the question kind of openly and rhetorically, what are you? Because we don't know as of yet.
I think the only thing we can say with some certainty, certainly not absolute certainty, but we can kind of know what Jacob Pelche's floor is as a professional hockey player. And he's had a couple really good seasons as an AHL player that have been productive, that have been allowing him to slot in certain different roles. But when it comes to the NHL level, there's still a lot of mystery wrapped around the former first round pick, because again, his initial burst onto the scene a couple seasons ago was somewhat productive. It wasn't blow the doors off productive, but it looked like there was an NHL player there that, you know, you really were excited to see the following year. And then, of course, he gets injured in training camp last season, suffers a shoulder injury, misses a whole bunch of time, isn't back on the ice until late January with the Wranglers, not back with the Flames till post-All-Star break in February, and then he gets injured again, a shoulder injury unrelated to the original one. But we didn't really see the Jacob Pelche last season that I think we saw 2 years ago, when he was energetic, he was first on the forecheck, he was able to impact the game in so many different ways. He had that personality and that character about him. I remember him hugging Jonathan Huberdeau on the bench, and he'd jump into guys' arms and they would score. And we didn't necessarily see a lot of that last season because of the injury trouble, because of the setbacks that he had. So for me, this is very much at his age now, and don't get me wrong, I'm not calling him old, but at his age and sort of where he is in his development as a prospect, very much from my perspective, a make or break year. And to, again, to get that contract done, to be into camp the second that it breaks, and to have the opportunity to fight for a spot, to fight for a role in the NHL, all these are key from my perspective for Jacob Pelche.
I'm really curious as to how this forward group shakes out and shapes itself up as we move through training camp. We don't know what Pelche is. He still has to prove to us and prove to the Flames what he is.
And maybe to himself, too.
And to himself. I imagine there's some frustration and maybe a little uncertainty in terms of the way the last couple of years went. Is there a spot in the lineup? Is there an opening night spot that you see tailor-made for Jacob Pelche as things stand right now?
I don't know if I would call it tailor-made, but I do see a path to Jacob Pelche being on the opening night roster and being in the opening night lineup, pardon me, and that's that fourth line left wing spot. If you want to move Ryan Lomberg over to the right side, that does free up a position on the left side, but it's not a certainty. It's not a guarantee that that's Jacob Pelche's spot. Like, we still would have to have conversations about Dryden Hunt, Walker Dewar, Adam Klapka, all players that I can see in competition with Jacob Pelche for that role. And that's not even counting the potential of Matt Coronato cracking a top nine role with the Calgary Flames as well, which means there's one less roster spot. It might not necessarily be the spot that Jacob Pelche is looking at. You know, he's not looking at a second line right wing role for Jacob Pelche that Matt Coronato might have the opportunity to seize, but suddenly that would be one more forward. There's only 14 forward spots that the Calgary Flames are likely to hold, and so you're in a situation where you're not maybe directly competing, or maybe you are, depending on how the Calgary Flames feel about Matt Coronato and his ability to adapt. We did see him on the fourth line last year, and so if they see that that's the best spot for him anywhere in the lineup and with the Flames is better than having him in a spot in the Wranglers, that's a debate for another day. But suddenly there's, you know, three, four, five guys that have the ability to take a spot on the roster that might impact Jacob Pelletier's ability to either be in the opening night lineup or being on the opening night roster.
So I do see I do see the ability. I do see a spot where, yeah, and you kind of pointed it out. I mean, the most logical place I can see, knowing what Jacob Pelche has shown us so far and knowing where things slot right now with this Flames roster, yeah, I think a spot on that fourth line is maybe a good starting point for Jacob. And that's not a bad thing. I know that there is a stigma of playing prospects on the fourth line, and that's not the way you develop them, so on and so forth. And I understand that. And for instance, I think there are numerous prospects that it doesn't make sense for. A guy, for instance, like Matt Coronato. Do I think Matt Coronato playing fourth line minutes makes a ton of sense? No, not really. I don't think that suits his skill set. But when I look at Pelche, I don't mind the idea of him playing in that role because I think it does suit his skill set a little bit better. And I think that, and I keep on going back to the comparison to Andrew Mangiapane-Vix, I see those guys so similarly in the way they play the game, the physical attributes. You know, maybe Mange has a little bit more, you know, Jacob never put up numbers like Mangiapane put up in
junior
A. Like, I mean, not junior A, major junior. Like what Mange did in the OHL, like he was bonkers.
Oh, he's a 100-point guy in the OHL.
A couple times, right? Pelche was never that in the queue. But I do see them profiling similar, just in their two-way game, their IQ, their work ethic, their size. All of those things profile very similarly. And where did Andrew Mangiapane get his start in the NHL? On the fourth line. And it wasn't, and he cut his teeth in this league playing on the fourth line. And that line that they put together a number of years ago of Derek Ryan, Andrew Mangiapane, and Garnet Hathaway was a really effective fourth line for that team under Bill Peters. And that's how Mangiapane started making his mark as an NHLer. It was only as he got elevated up the lineup because of how effective he was in that role that he started to become a 20-goal threat and a one-time 35-goal scorer and all that type of stuff. And so if Pelche cracks an NHL roster on the fourth line, I don't see anything wrong with that because a line of Pelche, Rooney, and Lomberg or something like that, I think can be a fourth line that you can play 11, 12 minutes a night and get Pelche some penalty kill time in there as well.
Well, I think the most important step for Jacob Pelche is to get an NHL job, keep an NHL job, and then see where he can go grow from there. Because like, let's keep in mind, he was only drafted 5 years ago. He's only 23 years of age, doesn't turn 24 until the 2025 calendar year. So it's not as though his development is done and he's the player that he's going to be for the rest of his life. There is still some track left to be run in terms of figuring out what he can be at the NHL level. But first and foremost, you got to get there. And I'm sort of the same mind as you. There's no problem having Jacob Pelche follow that Andrew Mangiapane path where, okay, first you get in. Then you get in and you make an impact night in, night out. And then you can maybe look at jumping up into the lineup into a top nine role at some point.
Yeah.
But first and foremost, the most important thing is for Jacob Pelche to prove that he can play NHL minutes, whether that's going to be 8 minutes, 10 minutes, 12 minutes a night, depending on how the lines are deployed. But you've got to get there first before he can start proving the rest of it.
Well, and fourth lines aren't always, and rarely are at this point, what they were 10 years ago.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, teams now look at fourth lines as lines that you're not just putting them out there to kill time anymore. You want to assemble fourth forward lines that can go out and win their matchups and beat the other fourth line and
get
terms
you momentum
of possession game. Exactly. Set up the next shift for inevitably when your top line comes back out and fourth line goes out and does some good work, hems in the other fourth line. Well, now you set up the top line to come back out with an ozone faceoff or in a little bit of a better spot if you're changing on the fly. So I don't mind that for Pelche. I don't know if there is a middle six spot that I realistically see him, unless he has a great camp. But I don't know if realistically there's a middle six spot for him to start the year. And maybe part of that is because we just haven't seen that from him yet at the NHL level. Like, he's shown flashes.
Like, we saw 7 points in 24 games a couple seasons ago, but that wasn't replicated the last season we've seen him at the NHL level.
And if he comes out and has a great camp, I fully believe that Ryan Huska and Craig Conroy and this coaching and management staff will make room for him on the roster and will make room for him in the lineup. If he proves he is a middle six forward, then he'll be a middle six forward on this team. It feels like it might be a tall task in camp to be able to do that, and that's okay too. And then I guess the last thing to touch on when it comes to Pelche is... is there room for both him and Coronado in this team's top 12? I think the answer to that is yes. In the top 12, I think Coronado and Pelche could both be in the opening night lineup. In the top 9, I don't think that that opportunity exists as things stand right now on September 12th.
No, if you're adding Coronado to the mix here and Pelche, that's giving you maybe 12 forwards that you're going to lock in. And so suddenly when you're talking about, okay, Pelche, you're competing with Hunt, Dewar, and Klapka, you elevate Coronado in there, and maybe in an indirect way, Jacob Pelche is competing with a guy like Kevin Rooney, because now if you're looking at your configuration of your lines, chances are if you elevate Coronado into a top nine role, somebody from that top nine has to drop to that quote-unquote fourth line, and you have a lot of different players assembled on your roster that can play down the middle. So suddenly you're mixing in, okay, well, Pelche, you've got to beat out those aforementioned guys, but now you're going to be in sort of a little bit of a direct competition to beat out Kevin Rooney as well if Coronado's on that roster.
Yeah.
Knowing you've got the flexibility as an organization where you can shift a Martin Pospisil, for example, down the middle to compensate.
I really do like the player. I think there is still a ton of potential with Pelche. You know, maybe his ceiling isn't as high as some other guys could be. Maybe we're not talking about a guy who ends up being a top-line winger in this league, but I still think there is an NHL, regular NHL ceiling for Pelche. And I think that, you know, at some point, being on an NHL shutdown line is a very, very realistic possibility for Jacob. But he's got to start moving towards that. And that's not even a criticism of him last year. He had nothing but bad luck last year. He took a questionable hit in the preseason that messed up his shoulder and took away more than half his year. Then he came back and was shot out of a cannon, and 4 games in, he got messed up again on an unrelated shoulder injury. 2 shoulder injuries in 1 year, and then, you know.
Especially for the style that he would want to play on the ice, too.
And it can mess with your confidence, and frustration plays into it, and you're out of rhythm compared to the rest of the league, and, you know, eventually got sent back to the American League to finish off the year as a result. I still really do like the player. It just, now that we're talking about more than 5 years in the organization, it's important for Jacob to start making his move towards being a full-time NHLer.
And that's sort of to bring it back full circle. That's why it's so important for this contract to get done in advance of
100%.
Camp. So he is on equal footing with the guys that he's competing with, because if he doesn't have a contract and then hypothetically he's not in camp, suddenly you're falling a step behind the players that you need to beat out in order to start in the NHL.
When Andrew Mangiapane had that protracted second contract negotiation with Brad Treliving and didn't sign until late in training camp, that hurt him that year. There's no doubt. It took him longer to get to where he wanted to go. And the same is true when Oliver Shillington had, as a young defenseman, had a long contract negotiation that basically caused him to miss all of training camp in the preseason. And also, there were some immigration issues that played into it, but he signed late. This was important to get done, so good on Jacob and his camp for making sure it does get done prior to training camp. Couple of texts, and Mick brings up a really interesting point. Says Pelche's a middle six when he hits his stride. However, they had better have a spot for him this year. That's why I'm moving Zeri and Pospisil to center. They can't send Pelche to the minors or they'll lose him. If Rooney is your fourth line center, then who's your 13th forward? It's Pelche, and he needs to play. And I think that Mick makes a number of good points in there. The waivers situation with Pelche is important to point out. You know, and I also think the point he made about Rooney is interesting, and I'll just I was just throwing that out there as a potential trio. But when you start to take into account all the forwards, yeah, Rooney might not be. Maybe Rooney's the 13th forward, Mick. Maybe it is Pelche, Lomberg, and Pospisil is a fourth line. Like,
if that would be miserable.
I think it'd be awesome.
I mean, if I'm looking from the other team's perspective, I think it would be very entertaining for Flames fans.
And it would make Wes Gilbertson happy because Pospisil would be playing center. It would be making Flames fans happy because Pelche's playing a regular shift. Mick, you're bang on. Maybe it's Pospisil who's centering that fourth line. But I do think to start the year, there is a way that we could see Jacob Pelche in your regular top 12 forwards. And this one from Brad, who says, Coronado needs to take a step this year as well. How much leeway do we give Pelche? And I think you do give leeway to Pelche. He's still a first-round pick, and that carries weight. And he did lose a year last year. Let's be honest. Last year was almost, not completely, but bordered on a lost year with the injuries that he had to deal with.
Yeah, in terms of a young player trying to find his way in the NHL, losing as many months and practices and skates and the circumstance that he was in is certainly not going to benefit a player's development. I also want to touch back a little bit, okay, on what's his floor, what's his ceiling. When he was taken in the first round 5 years ago, he wasn't never projected to be a top-line winger. That was never going to be the projection for Jacob Pelche. He always skewed to a middle-six winger.
Right, and from when they drafted him.
Right, this isn't a development curve issue where it's like, oh, man, this guy was a surefire top-line left winger and these injuries have derailed him. No, he still has the potential to reach that full potential from draft day. It's just a matter of getting back to the right track and having an injury-free camp and an injury-free season and get that confidence back so he's right back on that correct path.
So Jacob Pelche reportedly has signed his deal. Should be official, we'd think, sometime on Friday. With Aaron Vickers, my name is Pat Steinberg. This hour of Flames Talk is underway from Penticton, and from the Golden Arches comes the Big Arch, the biggest bite on the menu, now available at participating McDonald's restaurants. 2-quarter-pound, 100% Canadian beef patties with no artificial preservatives or flavors, sourced from Canadian ranches and farms. The Big Arch is perfectly layered with 3 slices of white processed cheese, crispy onions, pickles, lettuce, slivered onions, and a new tangy delicious Big Arch sauce. It's more McDonald's to love. Try the Big Arch today.
Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Alongside Aaron Vickers of NHL.com, it's Pat Steinberg along with you from Penticton. We're hanging out here at the South Okanagan Event Center for the 2024 Young Stars Classic. And on Friday morning, it's a Thursday evening, on Friday morning, our next guest will have a keen eye on the goings-on as the Flames prospects for the Young Stars Classic will go through their first kind of pregame routine, and then Friday night, Flames and Winnipeg Jets prospects here at the South Okanagan Event Center. Our next guest is the Director of Player Development for the Calgary Flames, and all over this Young Stars Classic, as he is every year. We say hello to Ray Edwards of the Flames, joining us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Mr. Edwards, always a pleasure to have you on the show. How are we doing?
Oh, doing great, Pat. Thanks for having me.
Hey, not a problem. Always great to chat with you, and always great to be back here in Penticton. Hey, it's always, you know, it's a kind of a official kickoff to the season, a big event for, you know, the young players in your development system. There's a big weekend upcoming, hey?
No, it's really exciting. Obviously, we got the kids yesterday and tested them all and got on the ice this morning for a quick rip and into the plane and onto the bus, and we flew to Kelowna today and did that drive from Kelowna to Penticton, and we just got here. It is one of the most beautiful places world here. So we're really excited to be here, really excited to see these kids, and I know they're excited too.
So from your perspective as the director of player development, Ray, what makes this event a worthwhile weekend for your players?
Oh man, there's so many things. I think number one, all these players want to play in the NHL. So I think the first thing it does is it's a tune-up for them. Like they get to play high intense, high pace, meaningful, purposeful hockey before our camp even starts in terms of the NHL part of it. So I think it puts them on a better playing field when camp starts. It gives them the opportunity to get going and get their game in order. I think Craig mentioned the other night, this thing happens fast. Before we know it, we'll be heading home on Tuesday morning, and we'll have played three games, and there'll be evaluations made. So, we put the emphasis solely on them being ready to go tomorrow night when that puck is dropped, because that's the point where they really start to become evaluated.
Ray, when you and you talk about evaluation, when we have you on in the summertime ahead of development camp, that is more of an opportunity to introduce players to the organization, how you go about things, eating right. All the off-ice stuff is so important during that summer development camp. And not to say the on-ice stuff is irrelevant, but maybe not as much of a focus. Well, this is, in a lot of ways, so much about the on-ice product. So how much evaluation is going on based on the three games that some of these kids are playing?
Well, there's a lot, because some of them may only play these three games based on how they play. So, Ryan and Craig, they've got a job to do in terms of putting that team together and putting the best players on the ice come opening night, and their job is to win games. So, and that's where we're at now. As you said, Pat, the summertime and development camp, that's your preparation. That's where you're learning. That's how, you're there to understand what is expected and how to do it. And all the resources and tools are given to you to do what you have to do. Now it's sort of the fruit of all that work. And we get to see how much work that actually got done and how much preparation they actually did.
Right.
And now they've got to put it all together in terms of playing games.
Ray, Aaron here, just a follow-up on that. Do you have to exercise any sort of caution in these evaluations, given that it is sort of the first meaningful type of hockey since March or April for some of these players? Or is that part preparation and that ability to hit the ground running part of the evaluation you do?
It's really clear to these kids that it begins tomorrow. So, and it's not, at the end of the day, it's life isn't fair, right? So it starts tomorrow, and it's made really clear to these kids that, hey, tomorrow, the buck stops with how you play. Like we've done all the prep, we've done all the work, we've done all lifted all the weights, you've eaten all the right foods, you've, run all the miles, but at the end of the day, you got to perform on the ice, and tomorrow it starts. And we want to make it real clear to them that this is a business, and we're here to get better, and we're here to develop players, but they've got to get the job done. So, hey, you can say it's pressure, you can say whatever it is, but at the end of the day, that's the job. The job is to put the time in, put the work in, prepare, and then have success come tomorrow night.
For you personally, is there a level of curiosity to see who responds quickly to that message?
It's the funnest part, Aaron. It's absolutely the funnest part, because all we're doing, we work with these kids all summer. We try to help them. We try to give them every resource available. But now it's fun, because now we're going to get to see the fruit of all their work and who rises to the top, who struggles, who needs more work, who needs more time, those types of things. And we understand that there's going to be players in all three of those categories, and we'll do the work needed based on what category they're in. So every year you have players that exceed expectations, and every year you have players that you're like, geez, I wish we would have got more out of him. So, but that's why we have player development. We're there to help them, and we're there to help them grow. And sure enough, there'll be some kids that have a tough stretch here, and we'll have to get them back up and get them back to work and get them back going.
Well, and the other part to that, Ray, and I would imagine this is a pretty important part of what you're talking about, too, is even playing field, right? Like the message that you're talking about is the same message that the Oilers kids and Vancouver and Jets prospects are getting. Like it's the same message and the same idea for them. So in a lot of ways, you're talking about a really even playing field on the other side.
For sure. And they're playing against their peers. It's not like they're out there against, you know, 1,000-game NHL players.
Yeah.
So this is where they have a real opportunity to show where they fit within that grouping of players. And that's why it's exciting for us. And Monday afternoon after that last game, you know, we'll get a way better idea of where some of these kids are at.
And the level of play at this event, like, you know, X's and O's and structure and systems, those things can be tough to get drilled in after only a few on-ice sessions, but the competitive level and the players finishing checks and gloves being dropped, I mean, the competitive level that we see here in Penticton in the games that are played, how much does that help in terms of you making that evaluation and how much does that help your job and the rest of hockey ops in going about their business?
Well, you hit it on the head, Pat. It's crucial. And that's why I think this tournament is so good for us. I mean, whether it's our rivalry with Edmonton, I know Van has rivalry. We have a rivalry with Van too. Winnipeg, like we all hate each other, and so I say that with the most respect that when no matter when we play these games, they are intense, they are competitive. There's no room to hide, and so we really get to see, you know, which kids sort of rise to the top. The cream always rises to the top, and again. You know, go back to what I said earlier, that we're going to have players that do that, but we're also going to have players that you wonder, okay, how can we help them, you know, make that step where they maybe didn't do what we hoped or wanted them to do this weekend. So, I mean, but that's part of development. That's part of learning. That's part of growing. Mm-hmm. So we'll get all different situations this weekend, but going back to what we expect, we don't expect them to be perfect and understanding F1's role and F2's role and tracking and D-zone. What we expect is that they compete and they work and they buy in and they're good teammates and all that stuff. So that's non-negotiable for us. And Craig and Ryan both made that very clear in our meeting last night. So we want to see the guys that do those things.
Ray, you mentioned some players will rise to the top, and that's just the nature. How much of a launching point into main camp can this tournament be for some of those prospects, regardless of age, regardless of circumstance? And the one that I just comes to mind when I think back is the impact Matthew Tkachuk had in this tournament back in 2016 as an 18-year-old to set himself on his pace.
I feel like, Pat, we talk about this every year we come here,
yeah.
But whether it was Matthew in that particular year or Rasmus, you know, in that mini brawl with Darnell Nurse
and
Manji challenging the bench and like, you know, I know some of those guys aren't with us anymore, but to answer your question, Aaron, it's crucial because, you know, how is Zane going to react? How is, you know, Sam Hansen going to react? How is Matt Vay going to react? You know, I'm really keen on seeing how they react. And it's going to be, as you guys know, the crowds are good, the games are intense. So, you know, it's early in the process, but you do want to see, you know, who rises to the top and who steps up and who says, you know what, I know this is exhibition, but I'm here to make a hockey club and I want to show these guys what I'm made of. And so that's sort of why you're so excited this time of year, because you want to see what these guys have.
And that's not just reserved for guys going out and scoring a hat trick or, you know, a 30-save shutout. And I think back to you're going through some of those examples. I remember Ryan Lomberg back in this tournament certainly making an impact.
Yep. 100%. You talk about making an impact. That guy was all over it. Like you know, again, it wasn't necessarily 3 goals and 5 points, but it was finishing every check, you know, winning every battle, stirring the pot, getting people engaged, dragging people into the fight, those types of things. And we have guys like that, Parker Bell, Lucas Siona. Those guys have to do what they do. And I think it's a big camp for guys like Lucas and Parker Bell, because they're trying to establish themselves. And obviously with the American League coaches, they're driving things. Like, they want to show them right away that, hey, we're here, we're ready, and we want to have an impact. So really big tournament for all of our guys, you know, whether it's guys that played in the AHL last year, like Stromer or Siona or Grush, or it's new guys that are coming in from junior, or guys that we just drafted that likely may end up back in junior. There's different levels of importance to all these kids. And again, that's why it makes it so exciting.
Yeah. We're chatting with Ray Edwards, Director of Player Development of the Calgary Flames, here on Flames Talk. A couple of things, you know, in terms of the specifics of this, what, when you're talking about guys who have been here before, so whether it's a Hanzek or a Stromgren or guys who have been here before and have taken part in this before, we ask you this every year about development camp, and I think the same probably applies here in Penticton. How much do you count on those who have been here before, or those who have gotten American League games under their belt already? How much more is on their shoulders?
Well, I think that's when you talk about leadership, right? And it's, you know, William Stromgren didn't come in last year and have a letter on his jersey, but when he comes to this tournament this year, we expect him to lead. And that's all part of his process of development. You know, how does he, you know, react in adversity? How does he react if we get down early? How does he react if we get a big lead? Does he keep going, or does he put the brakes on a little bit? Like, all those little things we can see. And I think for guys like William and Lucas, who've been in this tournament before, like, they will be looked upon as leaders, as captains within this group. And they may not go into the NHL this year or the American League this year and wear a letter, but they're wearing a letter this weekend because we see that in the future and we want to see how they react to it. So, you know, there's so many different variables that we're looking at, and that's a good point by you, Pat, to bring that up, because those guys that have been here before, we're definitely looking for them to step up and show these young kids how to handle it, how to embrace it, be the leaders on the bench, understand momentum and how to change it, and be the guys that drive the bus for this group.
Ray, that's sort of the off-ice expectation raising for those players that have been here in this tournament before. Is there an increased expectation for players returning from an on-ice perspective, or would you grade the 2024 draftees the same as you would, you know, from the 2023 class or the 2022 class that have already participated in this tournament?
I think I think they're separate. I think, you know, the guys that have been here before and the guys that have had some time potentially in the American League, we expect them to be good players in this tournament. And again, that doesn't necessarily mean that they have to have, you know, 8 points in three games, yeah, or whatever it is. But whatever role they do, we expect them to be really good at it. We expect them to be players that, you know, again, I'm not saying they have to dominate, but they have to show that they're the better class of this group. And the guys coming in, and a good example of that is the Lipinskis and Hanzik from last year. They've had this tournament now for a year. Now they know what to expect. So now we expect them to take a step. For the new guys coming in, really, really keen to see how they react from game one to game three. Because game one, they're going to be nervous. And game two is against Edmonton. So, like, how do they react in the Battle of Alberta, right? Mini version. So, like, there's so many different things we're looking at. And whether they're their first time at the tournament, or they're guys like William and Lucas, who probably won't be in this tournament again, we're all looking for different things from the players in different classes, if you will.
How excited are you for the puck to drop here on Friday night, Ray?
I think you can probably hear it in my voice. So we say this all the time, guys, like, from a development standpoint, you know, this, our staff, as you know, Pat, they work extremely hard, and we've got a great staff, and this is a little bit like our Super Bowl, right? We put all that work in over the course of the year and the summer, and you know, these players are getting judged in training camp on how that work was done, you know, how good that work was done, you know, how they look here in camp, how their bodies respond, how their mental game responds, how their skill development looks. So, I mean, we're really excited to see it. I know just at a quick glance of the testing, overall, we are really happy with the gains that a lot of these guys made. So that's the first step, and now the second step is going on the ice and showing it. And as you guys know, it's a really exciting weekend. And, you know, we just want them to do well. We want them to succeed. We care about these kids, and we want them to have success. And we know they put a lot of work in the summer. So, but the idea is you gotta go out and do it on the ice now. And again, we'll have some people that have real good weekends, and we'll have some that we have to go back to the drawing board on.
Yep. Well, we'll see you here on Friday morning. Looking forward to seeing you, my friend, and have a great weekend
here
in Penticton. Yeah, I'm currently looking at the Penticton V's logo at center ice. We're in the building right now.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, we just got to the hotel. So, yeah, look forward to seeing you guys. If you need anything, please let me know, and we'll look forward to this weekend for sure.
Absolutely. Thanks for doing this. I know you just got in, so really appreciate the time, Ray. Thanks as always. We'll see you tomorrow.
Always a pleasure, fellas. Talk soon.
Absolutely. That is Ray Edwards. He is the Director of Player Development for the Calgary Flames, helping us tee up the Young Stars Classic 2024 here on Flames Talk as we start to wrap things up this hour. Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. The Young Stars Classic starts Friday night here in Penticton at the South Okanagan Event Center. That's where we are wrapping up this hour on Flames Talk. And Ray Edwards joined us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. The best pizza, pasta, steaks and ribs since 1975. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast or call them at 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery.